Joining us now, very pleased to be joined by Adam Barr from the Golf Channel. Good morning to you, Adam. Happy Sunday. Thanks for joining us.
Russ, Pat, good morning. How are you?
We're doing great, and we're excited to talk about equipment because we're in the home stretch now. We've been hearing about this story for months, going on years. The USGA's decision and the R&A and the PGA of America and all the other tours around the world have jumped on board with the decision to roll back grooves on irons and wedges. And Adam, I guess I'll start off with this. Where does this equipment rollback rank on the totem pole of equipment decisions in the history of golf?
First of all, I want to say I'm excited to be the warm-up act for Ty Botha. Moving on to your question, this is a big one. It's interesting. Not everybody calls it a rollback, but we'll have to see what the effect is before we know if we can call it that. If we get to, you know, January and tour players are spinning the ball just as much as they always have because they're such good athletes, then it won't seem like much of a rollback, will it? But on the totem pole, it's way up there because the idea is to have wedges spin less out of junky lies, out of the rough, therefore making guys drive it more carefully. So the intended effect is to essentially make the bomb driver less effective. So it's kind of a backdoor way of getting at incredible length by people who feel like, well, wherever I land this ball, I'm going to get it out because I'm that good.
Hey, Adam, I wanted to ask you about, you know, in regards to the amateur golfer or the very good, you know, amateur golfer, guys, you know, that play in their local club leagues or county leagues and, you know, want to be, you know, sort of playing within the rules and those types of things. And I know this, I don't believe this rule takes effect for amateurs for a while, but nonetheless, I'm sure some of the guys are going to want to start, you know, playing the right equipment so that they get used to it. But unlike the situation we have with the trampoline effect drivers and how guys were, you know, were not really taking those clubs on, because of, you know, the fact that they were going to be illegal. When you're talking about somebody's irons, I guess my question is, it's a lot easier just to replace a driver, even though drivers are expensive, especially the good ones. But people kind of become very enamored with their irons, and it's more of a long-term relationship with your irons, and it's more expensive to replace your irons. Do you think this is going to have an impact with amateurs willingly going to the whatever the new irons are going to have to be in 10 years or whenever it is? Or do you think guys will end up just keeping their old irons even if they're in violation of the rules?
I think they'll keep their old irons, especially because it's 2024, so they're going to have 14 years. I think they'll keep their old irons unless their particular club insists on new irons, in which case they'll all buy new. But I think that's unlikely. They've got a 14-year window, and a high-ranking official at the USGA told me that the deadline will be, and these are his words, 2024 or never. So it may never come about.
Interesting.
And I think it won't ever come about. I think for recreational players, you know, club players, even, you know, plus two handicaps playing in their club championship, my suspicion is that this is kind of a quiet and slow way of finally bifurcating the rules of golf.
I was just going to get to that, Adam, because I think that this scenario of the V-groove changes on the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour, all the professional tours, really highlights the difference between pros and amateurs. And you kind of stole the words from my mouth. It almost seems like finally we're getting to a point, you know, the 14-year difference between implementation for pros and AMs, I think, is the biggest example of this. We're finally getting to a point where perhaps there are now two sets of rules.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to end up happening, and that 14 years will give us a chance to see what the effect is of the new grooves on the elite part of the game. I mean, people who are plus sixes or better, which is, you know, pretty much generally accepted the level you have to play if you're going to just hang on by your fingernails on a pro tour. And the rest of us who are playing, most of us aren't playing low handicap. Most of us are playing, you know, to much higher than that. And that'll give us a good study period to determine, you know, whether or not the game changes significantly among the recreational players. Now, I don't think it will. I think what's going to happen is around 2024, people look at the calendar and say, oh, we were supposed to change that. You know what? We're all enjoying our golf. The heck with it. We're not going to change it.
But what about the stipulations that manufacturers, after the 2009 calendar year, can't anymore produce these U-Groove clubs. Will that have to change and the manufacturers can go back to producing the U-Groove clubs? Because I had read that starting January 1, 2010, no more U-Groove clubs can be produced. However, manufacturers have all of next year, 2010, to sell all the clubs that had been produced until the end of this year.
Right, they have a year to clean up their inventory. So that's true. They won't be producing. And, you know, once again, a 14-year period is a long time during which to convert everybody. And people who want new irons will have to get used to the non-U grooves. But it's important to remember this when I say that people have to get used to it. For most of us, it's not going to make a difference. I think you and I could go out there now with a box groove wedge and a wedge with a slightly more V-shaped groove in it, and hit the same kind of shot, and neither one of them is going to stop on the green much different than the other, because frankly, we don't move the club head that fast. The spin and the rollback that you see from the pros is because they move their wedge, despite the fact that it looks like a nice easy wedge swing, they move their wedge head an awful lot faster than we do. That's one of the reasons the USGA felt comfortable passing this rule, is in their estimation, for recreational players, even down to some single digit handicaps, the difference in the behavior of their high lofted iron shots is not going to change very much, if at all.
Adam, though, I think you'll agree that there's been kind of a psychological agreement that, for lack of a better term, that, you know, we're all playing the same equipment, pros, amateurs, and we get some sense of, hey, well, these guys don't have anything different than we do. And that's how we kind of compare ourselves, even though we really can't compare it. Like if somebody hits a 300-yard drive on the tour and then you, using their same driver, hit a 300-yard, you're like, hey, I'm just as strong as, you know, even though you do it once every, you know,
blue moon,
you know, every 5 months and they do it every day. You have that feeling like, hey, I know I can do the same thing they're doing with the same equipment. Now that this is going to be implemented for the pros, and as you say, it may never be implemented for the amateur. Do you think we're, like Russ said, we're going to get away from that, one set of rules for everybody? So at that point, do you think maybe drivers that have the trampoline effect, maybe they become more popular than they have been in the past because they were quote unquote illegal? Or on the pro side, do we get to a point where, you know, maybe the Masters is able to implement a specific ball just for that tournament so they don't have to keep lengthening? What I'm saying is, if we are acknowledging now there's two sets of rules with equipment, does that break down some barriers
that were there in the past?
I think it definitely does. And it's because of the ability gap. Lee Trevino used to say that he was one of many who said that there's very small difference in ability between the good club player and the professional. Well, now it's beginning to widen significantly because of athletic training, because people are getting better and better at every sport. You know, look at track and field and how fast guys can run now compared to just 15 years ago. So, yeah, I think with respect to ability, all you got to do is watch a tour player for 5 minutes on the range and you realize that this is a different creature than the other three guys in your Saturday foursome. So, yeah, I think that's definitely happening. But people say, well, that removes some of the charm of the game. Let's remember that we're only talking about one subset of the rules when we say we all play by the same rules. It's equipment rules were all the same for all of us, whether it be me at my 22 or Tiger Woods at his +9. But the rest of, if you bifurcate the equipment rules, the real essence of the game doesn't change. We all play by the same playing rules. You can play on the same playing field that some of these tour players play on the public ones. Take Pebble Beach and go all the way back. You're playing the U.S. Open. And that's something you can't do in a lot of other sports. So just bifurcating the equipment rules doesn't completely divorce us from the game that the professionals play. I think golf's charm in that regard, the same rules argument, remains intact. All you're changing is Appendix 2.
If you're a sadist, you'll play Pebble Beach from all the way back.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're paying that much money, you may as well enjoy it, is what I'm saying. So move up a little bit, America.
Russ Evans and Pat Rooney Jr. with you, Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, and we're joined on the line by Adam Barr from the Golf Channel discussing equipment and, of course, the impending Grooves rules changes taking effect January 1, 2010. Adam, before I let you go, I wanted to sneak in a hybrid question because I am a true believer in hybrids. My lowest iron in my set is a 5-iron. I've got a 2-hybrid and a 4-hybrid, and we're now seeing the pros play those same clubs. It had been kind of taboo for the last 3, 4, 5 years, but Y.E. Yang, PGA champion, the most famous famous shot from his win over Tiger a couple months ago was that three hybrid to the 18th green. Now, I know the Tiger doesn't have a hybrid in his set. I don't think Phil Mickelson does either, but are we not too far away from seeing almost every player on the PGA Tour with at least one hybrid in their bag?
I think we're very close. I mean, the first barrier in that regard was carrying, and Fred Couples did this years ago, was carrying a cavity-backed, you know, perimeter-weighted 3-iron instead of the blade that went with the rest of the blades in your set. Fred Funk did that, hit that famous shot at 16 when he won it at Sawgrass with essentially a game-improvement 3-iron. And that was the first barrier. Then guys realized they could get the high, soft landing flight with a hybrid, and they all started putting those in the bag. So, yeah, you're going to see that trend continue just the way you did guys going from persimmon to titanium drivers. So no question that's going to happen. And look at the shape of a hybrid. Then get out a book by Jeff Ellis or one of the other authorities on ancient clubs and look at the shape of some of those clubs, and you'll see that everything old is new again.
Yeah, good point. He is Adam Barr from the Golf Channel. He also has a new online blog, One Good Paragraph. Adam, give us an idea for what's going on with this One Good Paragraph.
That's just fun and writing practice for me, and I want to get other people to participate in it. It's really nice of you guys to give it a plug. It has nothing to do with golf, although I'll occasionally write about golf on there. But I figure if 3 to 5 times a week I can get on there and put in a good paragraph or two, you know, my writing chops will stay sharp. And I want people not just to reply, but to put in their good paragraphs too. And it's just a bunch of fun because whether you're in the print side, the internet side, or the TV side, you got to be a good writer if you're going to be a communicator. So for me, it's just a little bit of fun, killing time in airports and stuff like that. So it's on WordPress, and it's a lot of fun. I encourage everybody to get on there. Thank you very much for plugging that.
Absolutely. So check it out. One Good Paragraph on WordPress. Also, of course, you can watch Adam periodically on the Golf Channel. Thank you so much for joining us, buddy, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, fellas. Play well.
There he is, Adam Barr from the Golf Channel, joining us talking equipment.